I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, G7 Summit. Foreign ministers gather in Italy. Top of the agenda is a response to Iran. Loud and unclear. A closer look at Speaker Mike Johnson and the opposition he is facing from his own party. Deadly wildfires. Officials in Hawaii release findings from last summer's devastating blaze in Lahaina. We have analysis from Jason Jones. And all roads lead to Rome. We have an inside look as the city of Rome is preparing to welcome 30 million of the faithful next year. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, setbacks in the selection process. The number of jurors in the hush money trial of former President Donald Trump rises and falls. They started the day with 7, but 2 were dismissed and then 12 were seated. One dismissed juror expressed concern about her identity becoming public and her ability to be fair and impartial. The other was excused after questions over whether his answers in court were truthful. The privacy concerns prompted the judge to bar reporters from identifying jurors' employers. In the midst of all of it, prosecutors asked for Trump to be held in contempt over a series of social media posts this week. Earlier, we spoke with an expert on jury selection. All right, let's bring in legal expert Tama Cudman to discuss today's trial development. She is a criminal defense lawyer who has argued cases in the very same Manhattan courtroom as this case that we're talking about right here. Tama, good to be with you today. Curious, though, how unusual is it to release two jurors, and what does that signal?
So, you know, remember something. This is probably the most publicized public trial in American history, right? So jury selection under these circumstances is extremely difficult. It is rare to release jurors once they've been seated, but under these circumstances, this is not unexpected. We expect to see some potential jurors who want to get seated for the publicity of it, because it's an important trial, because they care about the outcome. So we're not surprised by the fact that somebody might have misstated their actual background so that they could qualify for the jury. And it's not surprising that a juror would want to get off of the trial after being revealed because of the intense pressure on jurors to perhaps rule one way or the other at the conclusion of the evidence.
Yeah, and Tama, let's talk a little bit more about that, you know, releasing the identities of these jurors. How potentially dangerous could that be?
Well, under these circumstances, very dangerous because, look, love him or hate him, people have very strong feelings about former President Trump. And the pressure on these jurors to do, you know, each side's bidding is going to be intense. And not just from the public, but also from family members. Look, we know that people have arguments over family dinners over President Trump. So can you imagine if you inject that kind of emotion into this kind of an important decision? It's extraordinary. And I think it's very important that these jurors' identities remain under seal for now.
Yeah, Tama, how long do you think this could take to get all the jurors for this case?
This could take a really long time because we could see a back and forth like this. We could see people get seated and then new information be disclosed that might disqualify them. We could see more scrutiny of the jurors that are being questioned, given the new information that's coming to light. And people who walk into the courtroom thinking that they could be impartial and really wouldn't be influenced by pressure, once they walk in there, they might really get a sense of how intense the pressure on them is going to be. And they might say, look, I can't do this. So it may take some time to see qualified jurors who can be impartial and who can be steadfast against the kind of pressure that they're going to be facing.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Tama, thank you so much for weighing in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate being on.
All right, well, pressing the flesh in Pennsylvania, Biden gets a big boost to his campaign, the backing of one of the most influential political families in U.S. history. At least 15 members of the Kennedy clan are supporting Biden. It is seen as a move to rebuke the candidacy of one of their own, RFK Jr. His sister, Carrie Kennedy, delivered the news.
Nearly every single grandchild of Joe and Rose Kennedy supports Joe Biden. That's right. That's right. The Kennedy family endorses Joe Biden for president.
Well, the move highlights how seriously the Biden campaign takes RFK Jr.'s independent bid for the Oval Office. President Biden says that he is pleased to have the endorsement of so many of the Kennedy family. Well, President Joe Biden says that he is holding Iran accountable for its recent attack on Israel. He also sent his top diplomat overseas to meet with allies to discuss the wars in the Middle East and Ukraine.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken stands alongside foreign ministers from the G7 and African Union. The war in Ukraine represents one of the pressing issues discussed at their meetings in Italy. Blinken calls on Congress to pass more funding for the war effort.
If Putin is allowed to proceed with impunity, we know he won't stop at Ukraine, and we can safely predict that his aggression will continue.
Ukraine's foreign minister told Secretary Blinken that Ukraine is under constant attack and needs more air defenses.
I don't think any other country in the world would be capable of fighting against Russia, a country of this size and influence and military potential.
Another hot topic, the war in the Middle East. Secretary Blinken and the other G7 representatives sat down to speak about that, too. And just today, President Joe Biden released a statement saying he is imposing new sanctions and export controls on Iran. Biden writes, "Let it be clear to all those who enable or support Iran's attacks. The United States is committed to Israel's security." Former President Donald Trump also inserting himself into world affairs. He met the Polish president in Trump Tower for dinner Wednesday night. That country sits on the border with Ukraine and has sheltered many of its refugees. The Trump campaign writes, the two presidents, who are great friends, discussed President Duda's proposal for NATO countries to go to 3% spending on their defense.
Well, this Saturday, that is the date House lawmakers plan to vote on a set of bills to provide foreign aid and potentially ban TikTok. Between now and then, lawmakers are mulling over the text of the bills. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has more on what's inside the $95 billion foreign aid package. Eric?
Yeah, definitely lots of money there, Tracy. Good evening. The Rules Committee debated the bills today, and I also want to let you know about something else I learned. Top House Republican leaders were considering to add a provision into the foreign aid bills to make it harder to oust Speaker Mike Johnson. Now, Speaker Johnson ended up putting out a statement saying that he will not seek any changes to the rule after major backlash by several Republicans. Right now, only one member can oust the speaker, have him a motion to vacate the speaker from the chair. One thing all lawmakers on the Rules Committee agree on is our adversaries are watching Congress very closely.
If we do not help Ukraine fight for their democracy and fight to protect their sovereignty, this war will not end. It will grow. It will grow. And this Republican delay has helped Putin and hurt Ukraine.
And Chairman, she is watching what happens in Ukraine to determine whether he invades Taiwan in the Pacific. And then the Ayatollah now has raised his ugly head.
President Biden is already throwing his support behind the set of four bills. So what's in it? $26 billion to provide support to Israel, along with humanitarian relief to Gaza citizens. $61 billion more for Ukraine. However, more than a third of it is dedicated to replenishing ammunition systems for the U.S. military. More than $9 billion in forgivable loans for Ukraine. For the Indo-Pacific, $8 billion for investments to counter China and ensure a strong deterrence in the region. The bill also includes a potential ban on TikTok that outlaws the platform from U.S. app stores unless it cuts ties with its Chinese parent company over the next year. Freedom Caucus members say we need to defend our own border before sending money overseas.
I cannot sit back and let something that does not have the security of this country, Congressman Meeks, I cannot do it as we have an invasion at the border.
In the Senate, Republicans are still reeling over the impeachment dismissal of DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas.
We have, in effect, ignored the directions of the House, which were to have a trial. that no evidence, no procedure. This is a day that's not a proud day in the history of the Senate.
It's a total travesty. I mean, it's the elimination of impeachment as a constitutional matter. It doesn't exist anymore. The Democrats just voted to say that a federal felony cannot, as a constitutional matter, be impeachable.
Democrats say justice won out.
The dangerous precedent was not the one the Republicans are talking about, but the one of letting impeachment take the place of policy disagreements. Cabinet person after cabinet person could be subject to this. We cannot have that happen.
Democrats tell me that there will be repercussions. They plan to slow walk bills and even object to motions to adjourn. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, as Eric just mentioned, Speaker Mike Johnson is facing a tough decision. Pass foreign aid funding and risk your job, or don't pass funding and possibly risk vital U.S. interests around the globe. A number of Republicans are threatening a motion to vacate if a vote on foreign aid pushes ahead. This comes 6 months after former Speaker Kevin McCarthy was voted out in similar circumstances. And here with more on the pressure that Speaker Johnson is facing is Mene Ukaburua, a member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board. Mene, good to have you back on the show. A lot to unpack here, but first, can you explain a little bit more why Speaker Johnson finds himself in such a difficult position right now?
Absolutely. So there has been a push to get supplemental funding for Ukraine's war efforts, along with Israel, Taiwan, and other national security causes for months now, which has been passed by the Senate but has stalled in the House. And that's mostly because there's a large group of Republicans, particularly in the right-wing Freedom Caucus, who oppose that spending, in part because they're skeptical of the Ukraine war effort, but in part because they also worry about adding to the debt. And so Mike Johnson himself supports giving this aid to Ukraine, as do a lot of the more establishmentarian Republicans. But there's a big enough group of them that Republicans aren't able to pass it on their own. And so Mike Johnson is looking at using some Democratic Party support to get this funding across the line. But there are a lot of members, particularly Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia, who oppose voting with Democrats on any of these issues and have dinged the speaker for depending on Democratic votes for these sorts of controversial bills. And so she says that if he allows a vote with Democratic support on these bills, she's going to advance this resolution to remove him from the speakership. And she's currently trying to see how many fellow Republicans are going to back her in that attempt.
Yeah, Manny, you know, why continue, I guess some would ask this, the stability of the party, especially now during this critical election year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that basically there are real policy divisions within the party, particularly on the cause of supporting the Ukraine war effort. And for Marjorie Taylor Greene, she does see it as being worth it to send a signal to the establishment wing of the party that the Republicans are moving in a different direction, that the doves on Russia, as you might call them, the people who want a slower war effort, have a lot of support in the party and want to exert control. But I do think that your implication is right, that voters are looking at this process of division among the Republicans and seeing a lot of chaos there, and it's not going to make them excited to cast their support, their votes for Republicans come November. And so the entire party does have an interest in resolving this internal debate and hashing out their disagreements without having to resort to the motion of removing the speaker repeatedly from his position, as they've done once already.
Yeah, I know it's really tough to predict, but I mean, how do you see this all playing out?
Well, as of now, Marjorie Taylor Greene hasn't really gotten a great deal of support. She does have the support of Thomas Massie, who's a member from Kentucky, who says he also will vote to oust Johnson if they do have an open vote on these bills. But she's been floating it for almost 3 weeks now, and she hasn't gotten as much support as she previously thought she would. Very importantly, Matt Gaetz, who is behind the ouster of Kevin McCarthy some months ago, has said that he currently doesn't support getting rid of Johnson. It doesn't seem as if there's going to be enough votes to remove him. And so Johnson seems to be making the right move by boldly saying, if you want to get rid of me, go ahead, find the votes. But it seems like Republicans have moved on and are looking to chart a different course rather than rerun the past.
All right, we're going to leave it right there. Mene, always good to be with you. Thank you so much for your insights.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, more than a dozen House Republicans are calling on the NCAA to ban biological men in women's sports. Currently, male athletes who self-identify as women are allowed to participate. That's if they take testosterone suppressants and reduce their testosterone levels. The NAIA, a smaller college athletics association, recently banned biological men from competing in women's sports. A police arrest pro-Palestine protesters on the campus of Columbia University. The demonstrators had set up on the lawn at the Ivy League school. Local media report that the university president, who testified on Capitol Hill yesterday about anti-Semitism on campus, authorized the police to arrest the protesters. And we now know the cause of a widespread 911 outage. It happened across four states overnight, leaving millions of people without a way to contact authorities. It appears to be related to Lumen Technologies, an emergency call service provider. A spokesperson for the communications and telecom company sent EWTN News Nightly the following statement. On April 17, some customers in Nevada, South Dakota, and Nebraska experienced an outage due to a third-party company installing a light pole unrelated to our services. We restored all services in approximately 2.5 hours. Our techs identified the issue and worked hard to fix it as quickly as possible. Lumen is not a 911 provider in Texas. The Federal Communications Commission is investigating. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including rebuilding Hawaii, reaction to the new report on last summer's wildfires in Hawaii, and what a few inches of rain did to the streets of Dubai. Welcome back. It has been roughly 8 months since one of the deadliest wildfires in U.S. history ripped through Hawaii, causing billions of dollars in damages and killing more than 100 people in the historic town of Lahaina. And now two reports released this week are shedding some light onto what exactly happened and the contributing factors, including a communications breakdown, a lack of disaster preparation, and unprecedented weather conditions. For more, let's bring in Jason Jones, founder of the Vulnerable People Project and a Hawaii native. Jason, always good to see you, my friend. So what is your assessment of these reports?
Well, in the first sentence of the report, it says it doesn't seek to place blame or to find discover a cause, but to lay out the facts. But the report makes clear what was obvious to me. I was on the ground there 72 hours after the fire. This fire was caused by power lines that were blown down into grassy fields. The brush was not maintained properly. There were not breaks, and the fire spread quite rapidly. What's tragic, as this report comes out, and it doesn't lay out any steps to make Lahaina safe, and I think the one thing we should all agree on is our goal is to make Lahaina safe and to keep those local communities, to keep Lahaina local, the Hawaiian communities and those Kama'aina communities should stay in Lahaina, but they don't lay out the next steps. But as a report is being published, they're putting power lines back up. What should have been made clear in 2018, there was a fire in 2018 where five homes were destroyed. The fire almost leaped over the highway. And then after this catastrophe in September, what should be made clear is the power lines need to be buried. The report makes that clear, even though it doesn't state that. The fire was caused by power lines that were blown down from hurricane force winds into grassy fields that weren't maintained.
Yeah, and Jason, I know that some members of your organization, they were in Lahaina just last week. What did they see and what did they have to say about how the community is faring now?
Yeah, we had members there last week. I'm on calls almost every day with local residents. The tragedy is that people are leaving every day. So the real fight is to keep the locals in Lahaina. There's still a housing crisis. I've talked to family members where they don't have a kitchen in the house, or there's 15 people in a home with one bathroom and one bedroom. So the housing crisis needs to be addressed. We need to keep Lahaina local, and we need to bury those power lines. The state of Hawaii has spent $10 billion on 11 miles of rail line on the island of Oahu. That money would have better been deployed at burying those power lines in Lahaina and in other Hawaiian communities that can face similar catastrophe.
Yeah, and going forward, Jason, what do you think should be done to prevent this from ever happening again?
Well, first thing is first is we have to look at the facts as they are and not be afraid to respond to those facts. The money needs to be spent. Hawaiian Electric, which is owned in part by BlackRock, it appears that they're responsible for this fire, or the city and county for not maintaining those breaks. The money needs to be spent. The power lines need to be buried. And at all costs, the locals, the families of Lahaina that were knit together, first the Hawaiian communities that were there at contact, and then the immigrant communities over the past two centuries that have knit together a beautiful ohana, one of the most beautiful communities in the world, they need to remain in Lahaina.
Yeah, and Jason, you were there, you mentioned, on the ground 72 hours after this fire happened. You helped out tremendously the community there. How are they doing? You mentioned, I asked how before how they were faring. What do they need? I mean, I'm sure there's still some ongoing needs.
Yeah, the housing crisis is the real catastrophe. I talked to one family that has moved 30 times in 8 months. So you have to imagine, if you have children, they have to go to school. Having to move almost every other week for 8 months, not knowing what the future holds. I've talked to principals of schools who say that they know that their parents have notified them that a lot of the families plan on moving to the mainland after the school year. So I would like to see the state of Hawaii make, you know, the best effort to keep those families in Hawaii. Because when you leave Hawaii, when you're a native Hawaiian or a Kama'aina and you leave Hawaii, that means that you're not going to see your relatives, your aunts, your uncles, your grandparents, you know, every other year, every couple years. So when these families are swept away, it's a real catastrophe.
Yeah, just I got to get going. But really quickly, you have a new book out. Quickly tell us about that and where we can get it.
Yeah, The Great Campaign Against the Great Reset. It's deploying Catholic social teaching against the ideology of extreme globalism. It's available. It's from Sophia Press. You can get it at Amazon.com or your local Catholic bookstore.
Okay, Jason, thank you so much. Always good to be with you.
Thank you, Tracy.
Well, an international airport is now closed and residents are leaving their homes amid an erupting volcano in Indonesia. The volcano is leading to dangers of ash, falling rock, and the possibility of a tsunami. Mount Rouen had at least five eruptions yesterday. Officials issued the highest level alert today. Smoke reached more than 1,600 feet into the air. Well, the United Arab Emirates is struggling to recover from its heaviest rainfall ever recorded. Earlier this week, nearly 4 inches of rain fell in just one day. Cars carefully navigated the streets as the UAE deals with roughly 1 year's worth of rainwater there. Some drivers abandoned their vehicles and ran for safety. Like many Arab nations, the UAE does not have the infrastructure to handle so much water. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, caught in the love of Christ. Hear what Pope Francis had to share with a group of Carmelite nuns who visited the Vatican. Plus, an exclusive interview with the mayor of Rome about preparations for the upcoming Jubilee year. Francis says the path of contemplation is a path of love. Speaking to a group of Carmelite nuns at the Vatican, the Holy Father told them to immerse themselves entirely in the Lord's presence. Doing so will fill them with joy and love. He added that the Carmelites allow themselves to be caught up by the love of Christ, and then he becomes their entire existence. Well, finally tonight, the city of Rome is preparing for the Jubilee year of 2025, and that means getting ready for the arrival of millions of pilgrims. EWTN Vatican Bureau Chief Andreas Tannhauser has a preview from the Eternal City with the mayor of Rome.
Pope Francis has explicitly spoken about the importance of this Jubilee having an impact on Rome and making the city even more beautiful.
With only 8 months to go until the beginning of the Jubilee 2025, the city of Rome is already experiencing a lot of changes. In an exclusive interview with EWTN News, the mayor of Rome, Roberto Gualtieri, spoke about his hopes for the Jubilee and the many interventions done around the city and the Vatican area.
Ci sono tantissimi interventi, alcuni proprio.
We are going to do many interventions, some right around Vatican City, starting from the beautiful Piazza Pia, uniting Castel Sant'Angelo to the Via della Conciliazione and St. Peter's Square in a kind of embrace. Just a few months ago, a kind of highway separated these places. This is very beautiful. First of all, because we are restoring one of the most beautiful squares of the city, but also because it has a deep meaning of unity between the city of Rome, the Italian state, and Vatican City.
In recent weeks, the Vatican presented some cultural initiatives for the Jubilee, as well as the number of pilgrims expected to come to Rome in 2025. Archbishop Rino Fisichella explained that the city awaits more than 30 million faithful for an event of profound historical value.
It will surely be a very large turnout, as it has always been for the Jubilees. It stems from an ancient tradition which was instituted by Pope Boniface VIII in the 1300s. And since then, it has regularly welcomed and attracted millions of pilgrims who, for deeply spiritual reasons, come to Rome. The Jubilee of 2025 will be particularly significant because Pope Francis wanted to consider the Jubilee of Hope in a world that has seen a dramatic pandemic and is now experiencing the horrors of war.
In addition to the many permanent infrastructural changes that the city is undergoing, Rome is already planning many logistical preparations for the Jubilee with the aim of providing a pleasant experience to the pilgrims.
We have strengthened logistical support points. We will count on special corps for the emergency operations. We will have lots of volunteers, and we will also distribute water to the pilgrims. We are trying to organize everything so that we always have a comfortable, welcoming at all the events. A lot of attention will be given to these events, and we wish everyone a beautiful Jubilee. I invite you all to come to Rome because this is going to be an extraordinary Jubilee, and we are waiting for you with open arms.
In Rome, Andreas Tonhauser, EWTN News Nightly.
An exciting time indeed, and we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.